It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, things are calming down this hour after a night of violent protests sparked by a police shooting. Crowds there gather just hours after police say an officer shot and killed an armed man during a foot chase. During the protests, one officer was hit in the head by a brick thrown into a squad car. Police then moved in to clear the streets, as you see here, but they say protesters set 4 buildings on fire and threw rocks at the officers. Milwaukee's mayor spoke earlier about the shooting. Listen.
He was hit by 2 bullets, one in the chest, one in the arm. That individual, it's a 23-year-old man, has died. The officer was wearing a body camera. It is my understanding that the body camera was operating. When I left the scene, which was probably a little after 5 o'clock, there was still calm at that scene. Later in the evening, as we all now know, things got out of hand.
Mayor Tom Barrett there of the city of Milwaukee also saying 3 people have been arrested. We heard from a witness who says that she does not believe the unrest is over in Milwaukee.
All right. Well, that's what started on Saturday night, and I'm sure that's what you have been watching over the weekend if you've been paying attention to the news. This is Sandy Rios. In the morning on AFR Talk, I just have to pause to say that in church yesterday, we heard the most wonderful messages about God's sovereignty in the affairs of men, how nothing surprises him. None of the chaos, he laughs at the evil plans and schemes of states and governments because he's not surprised by them and he's got it all in hand. And I believe that's true. And I also believe that God has compassion on all of us, policemen, citizens, Americans right now watching our country be torn apart. I don't think that he, for a moment, does not understand the grief that we feel to watch our country so disassembled. Nevertheless, it is still true that God is sovereign. I want to start by saying that today, just to remind all of you who trust him and believe in him that we will move forward. We'll get up. Every day will be a new day, and whatever comes, we will accept. Whether it's victory or defeat on this, in the world in which we live, we know that ultimately God will be victorious and we are his people. And that's just a blessed hope, isn't it? And it removes a lot of the fear. So still we fight. All right. So Milwaukee, what a mess, terrible mess. Of course, we know the story now that 2 Milwaukee policemen did a traffic stop on Saturday night. I think it was about 8:30 at night. The 2 guys in the car got out and started running. One of them turned back toward the police, had a gun, and a policeman shot him, and he was killed. He was shot twice, and then right away, riots break out. It was all over social media. It was, you know, go burn down white businesses. It was amazing how quickly the flames were fanned, and the flames actually were set to a BP gas station, which was burned down. The owner is, I think, Indian, at least his name, maybe he's Pakistani, but he's of that descent. He said he's been there for 36 years, and he's not sure he'll ever build it back. And you think about the devastation to that neighborhood, the need for a gas station, employment, and so it's gone. You know, it's that's, of course, not the only business that was burned down there. I think there were 3 others, at least burned. Fire, I don't know if they were burned down. They couldn't. The fire and rescue couldn't go into the gas station because there were so many bullets flying. The miracle is that only the black man in the car running, then turning back with a gun toward the police, that he was the only one that was killed. That's the real miracle. And now we know that the young policeman, I think he's 24, who shot the black person fleeing was black himself. And so, but that doesn't matter. Of course, that doesn't matter. It doesn't, you know what? From my perspective, it doesn't matter. This has nothing to do with race, except that so many people who are evil, who want to use this, are using it to advance their causes. But this is a little inconvenient because the shooter in this case was a black policeman. Last night, they called out the National Guard in Milwaukee. One person was shot, but I don't think there was any other. I mean, that doesn't mean there was no trouble. There was plenty of trouble. They're throwing these huge rocks. The only reason they're not having more trouble is because the police, I think, are doing a good job of standing their ground and fighting back. In fact, as you know, Sheriff David Clark, who's the sheriff of Milwaukee County, you've gotten acquainted with him. He's been a guest with us, and certainly he's all over the place. He speaks with power and tons of wisdom. And I wanted you to hear what Sheriff Clark, at least in part last night, he made a statement. And of course, he teaches, you know, when he's almost like a scholar when it comes to police matters. And his philosophy, of course, is one of law and order, and it has nothing to do with color. But this is what Sheriff Clark had to say last night. Cut three.
I'll start by saying this, because there's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, in terms of what causes these situations. The police use of force serves as an igniter, there's no doubt, but to an already volatile situation, a volatile mix of urban pathologies, failed urban policy that exacerbates inescapable poverty, failing public schools, inadequate parenting, father-absent homes. We all know when fathers are not around to shape the behavior of young boys, they oftentimes grow up to be unmanageable misfits that the police have to deal with in an aggressive fashion. Pathologies like lifestyle choices, questionable lifestyle choices, gang involvement, drug and alcohol abuse, as well as massive unemployment. Those are the ingredients. Those are the things that cause resentment, anger, and frustration to boil beneath the surface, and then all of a sudden the police situation comes along, and that's why I said it's an igniter, but it's an igniter to an already festering situation.
That was Sheriff David Clark, Milwaukee County Sheriff. You know, he's black. He always wears a cowboy hat. He's a commanding presence. He's just he's an amazing man. And, of course, he's going to be the target, I think, for many, many leftists. And that's probably, you know, they're probably looking for a reason, I would guess, to cause him trouble in Milwaukee. And why do I say that? Why do I, you know, am I saying that there's no problem with police and black men? No, I'm not saying that. But I am saying that it has become a tool of the left, the violent left, to target and to disrupt, to stir up the hearts and minds of black citizens against white citizens. They love it. They love to stoke the flames of racism and use it to their advantage. And, of course, it's not to the advantage of the lower-level black leaders. It's to the advantage of the white elites who are pulling their strings, like George Soros. George Soros is pouring tons of money into black communities, into pastors in the black communities, and you know, expecting results. As a matter of fact, I was gonna, let's see, where is this? I just got this from our friend Star Parker. I'm gonna talk about George Soros at greater length tomorrow, because it turns out, remember, George Soros is the Hungarian leftist billionaire who, in another day and age, would have long ago had charges brought against him for undermining of this government. Nevertheless, not now. No, not now. He's thriving. He's putting millions of dollars into every possible organization he can think of that can undermine and destroy this country. It's not a secret. The only thing that's secretive is his organization. You can hardly penetrate and get any news. And now all of his stuff has been hacked. And we're going to talk. I'm sure people are just beginning to see what's in those hacked emails. But even George Soros now has been hacked. Star Parker's reporting, this is her part of the Soros leak. She said, it has revealed that millions of dollars in ties to faith-based groups in poor minority communities. Page after page reveals how effective his money is used to forge partnerships with the media and clergy, as well as partnerships with local elected officials. And of course, she reminds us that Black Lives Matter is funded by George Soros. All right, so then that tied into a black pastor, here it is, a black pastor on camera yesterday, Reverend Richard Bush. I don't know anything about him, but he's the pastor of the Pentecostal Church of God in Christ, and he says, of course, the problem is the city must put more money into the north side because residents there don't have nothing to do but destroy stuff. So that's what the pastor says. It's all about money. And as a matter of fact, a young black man was interviewed on a local television channel last night, and he said something similar. Let's listen. It's a cut six.
It's sad because, you know, this will happen because they're not helping the black community. Like, you know, the rich people, they got all this money and they're not like, you know, trying to give us none.
The rich people, they got all this money and they not like, you know, try and give us none. Now, first of all, of course, school. Could we just say that obviously this kid is not being instructed. This is his English. He can't even talk. He can't even express himself. And then the other part of this is it's all about money. If only they'd give us money, this wouldn't happen. You know, I don't have time to expand this, but I would say this kind of attitude in the black community is very common. I have, and it's because somebody keeps repeating it, as though white American citizens are to empty their bank accounts to just give money to black people because of slavery. That's what reparations is all about. And the lack of understanding that, you know, black Americans, do I need to go into it? It would take me a long time to say that, you know, this is a new world. We are not responsible for the sins of our fathers. We have to live, you know, the consequences of the sins of our fathers. But just as black Americans now we're not slaves, white Americans now we're not slave owners. And so, but I would say even just the notion that there is an obligation, and of course, white America, if you want to call it that, I hate this, but we have to talk about it this way. There's so many, what tax dollars are poured into black communities, and those tax dollars are from Americans, you know, scholarships and programs and after-school programs and on it goes, food stamps, and of course, white Americans get those too. Of course they do, but I'm just saying that's tax dollars from Americans. That's the help that's being poured into the black community. But I have a very good friend, a black pastor, who I will not name, but because he was very close to me. And I remember one day we got into a discussion because he had had a problem and he wanted some help financially. And he thought that he was genuinely terribly hurt that his white friends, especially in the pro-life community, had not just sent checks to him. He honestly expected that they would start giving him money because of the trouble that he'd had. And I genuinely said back to him, I talked to him about a situation I'd gone through, and I said, you know, I just want you to know this, something like this happened to me, and no one has sent me checks either. That's not the way the white community thinks. We think our family, maybe our closest friends, but we mostly think we've got to, you know, dig down and make this work. We don't really wait for people to send us money. And we had honestly a heart-to-heart talk about that. I will never forget it. I do think that it's kind of something that's repeated and expected because of the culture in America. And I don't think white Americans understand. And I think that this kid had no attitude. When he said what he did, he wasn't being mean. He just said, the rich people, they got all this money and they not like they know they don't give us none. Well, who told him to expect that? It's just part of some sort of word on the street, just a common understanding. But it shouldn't be a common understanding. And therein lies the problem, because all of us are Americans, equal in God's sight, equal in responsibility, and equal in opportunity. And so on it goes. So Milwaukee, the trouble continues. There's a lot more to say about that. Maybe in the last segment I'll get around to coming back to that. In fact, I will. But coming up next, we want to break because Steve Forbes, a former presidential candidate but also editor of Forbes magazine, will be joining us to talk about the economic plans of the major party candidates for president. And I'll be anxious to hear what he has to say. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary. and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
In our culture, youthfulness is celebrated while aging is dreaded. We're obsessed with the next generation. This is Jim Garlow. Wisdom is so rarely valued and pursued, yet Leviticus 19:32 states it succinctly, "Stand up in the presence of the elderly and show respect for the aged." And the New Testament echoes the Old Testament, "You who are younger, be subject to the elders." Our children need to learn to interview grandparents, to hear the wisdom they have to share. Today, it's as simple as a smartphone video at the dinner table or using FaceTime and Skype. Those who've gone before us leave us with a testament of God's sustaining grace, or His story of His provision and His love, a heritage of faithfulness passed on through godly lives. Let us learn from the generations before us, and let us pray that we become them. This is Jim Garlow.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Christian colleges and universities in California are breathing a sigh of relief. Lawmakers there backed off a controversial bill that would have infringed on religious liberty. Senator Ricardo Lara, an openly gay lawmaker, said he just wanted to protect transgender students from discrimination. Critics say the legislation would have prevented schools from requiring chapel attendance and would have banned professors from teaching from a Christian worldview. Dateline Plymouth, Massachusetts, Captain Wayne Nickerson caught a rare blue lobster, a two-pounder, a mighty rare feat, according to the Lobster Institute. Yes, there really is such an institute at the University of Maine. They estimate about one out of every 2 million lobsters is blue. Captain Wayne's wife tells ABC News they hope to give the lobster to a local aquarium. So you can forget about ordering a blue lobster at the Red Lobster. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Today in Detroit, he's got, I don't know, a dozen or so economic advisors he just named, hedge fund guys, billionaire guys, six guys named Steve, apparently. And so they wrote him a speech and he delivered it in Detroit. Now, they tried to make his old, tired ideas sound new. But here's what we all know, because we heard it again. His tax plans will give super big tax breaks to large corporations and the really wealthy, just like him and the guys who wrote the speech, right? He wants to basically just repackage trickle-down economics. Now, you know that old saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Trickle-down economics does not help our economy grow. It does not help the vast majority of Americans, but it does really well for people already at the top. Well, we're going to turn that upside down. We're going to make the wealthy pay their fair share in taxes for a change.
All right, so that's how Hillary Clinton feels about Donald Trump's economic plan. And I guess it would be appropriate that one of those Steves join us this morning. That one of those Steves is Steve Forbes. And he just happens to be chairman and editor of Forbes magazine, also the author of Reviving America, How Repealing Obamacare, Replacing the Tax Code, and Reforming the Fed Will Restore Hope and Prosperity. He was a presidential candidate in 1996 and the year 2000. And I have to confess to you that I wanted Steve Forbes to be our president in those years. I supported his candidacy, and it's a pleasure to have him on the air this morning. Good morning, Steve.
Cindy, how are you? Good to be with you. Thank you.
I'm very well, sir.
And words.
Well, I meant them because I you know what? It's amazing. When I think of your life, you are there's much discussion about the children of the rich. You know, the Donald Trump kids. What a tribute they are to him, and how uncommon that is. You're a child of a rich man too, and yet same thing. You have conservative values. You love your family. You're conservative in your platform. How did just a quick word on how did your dad or mom raised you in a way that you kept your feet on the ground?
Just basic discipline in childhood, loving the discipline and working for an allowance and making sure that he realized how things were done. He always took us to business meetings, not that we might be interested in the business, but he wanted to see that this just doesn't happen. You have to work each day. It's like tending a garden. You let it go, you're going to lose it, and the weeds are going to take over. So he wanted to see that, wanted us to see as kids, that this is an ongoing thing. You can take nothing for granted.
Well, you know what? The same old mantra Hillary Clinton is repeating now about how Donald, now we'll make it partisan because we have to, Donald Trump wants to help the rich get richer, and she is, you know, the champion of the poor. Meanwhile, Warren Buffett and about a half a dozen other billionaires are campaigning with her. That's amazing to me, and I would love to know your thoughts coming from the perspective of a wealthy man to the economic plans of each of these candidates. What is your perspective on that?
Well, when Hillary Clinton talks about trickle-down economics, that's what she and Barack Obama and the Federal Reserve have done for a decade now. The stock market's done well. That's great. Top 1% have done well. But most of the country has not done well. So what she accused the Republicans of, the Democrats have been practicing now for almost a decade. And in terms of getting the economy moving, what you need to do is remove the barriers. John Kennedy did it. Ronald Reagan did it. And the economy blossomed. Get out of the way, and the American people will do the job.
So do you feel like Donald Trump's economic plan would do that?
I think there are very good elements in the plan. I obviously like a flat tax, just throwing the whole tax code out and starting all over again. But if you're not going to go that far, it's a very, very good step in the right direction. I think if he gets elected and the Republicans keep the Congress, but next year, I think when they sit down and start to look at serious reform, serious change, serious tax cut, they're going to find that if you make one change, one deduction change, you're going to have to do all of them. You know, you're too young to remember 1986. Democrats and Republicans under Ronald Reagan sat down, and they realized that if you touch one tax shelter, you're going to have to touch them all. And so they ended up doing far more than they had anticipated. They cleaned the tax code of the tax shelters. Cut the top rate from 50% down to 28%, two tax brackets, and you know it passed the Senate 97-3.
Well, that is amazing. And, you know, I think one thing that gets lost in discussions is the, okay, this almost become a cliche, so I want to try to uncliche it if I can. When the President of the United States constantly says, and Hillary Clinton says that, you know, we're looking out for the middle class, we're going to help the middle class, the truth is, they have done the opposite, and that the left, part of their strategy is to destroy the middle class because the middle class is the one really that spends their money and resources and time fighting the left. It really isn't the upper wealth. You are the exception, sir. You are. It's the middle class who get down in the trenches, who roll up their sleeves and fight, fight, fight. They work in elections. They do all kinds of things. They give to their churches. They give to, you know, they are the worker bees of the. They are the heart and soul of the country, and so they are the ones that are under attack. So when you look at these two different plans, what would happen to the middle class? You know, how do they help or hurt them?
Well, immediately it means they keep more of what they earn. between $1,500 and $6,000 a year. That's hardly the description Hillary Clinton would give, but that's the truth of the plan. Trump designed it so that people get an immediate boost. And by having incentives in or removing barriers to the economy, you would see much greater economic growth. And what that means translates is you're going to get more pay, you're going to have more opportunity to move up the economic ladder, and it helps those who have the least. You know, those who have the least are those who are struggling to keep what they've achieved. They're the ones that are hurt by this crummy, stagnant economy.
I heard Ben Stein commenting on the plans, and his view of this is that Trump's plan does not, well, I think he said both plans, but Trump's especially would increase the deficit, and that he said that's the thing we have to attack the most. He says that wealthy corporations don't need tax cuts, tax breaks. What would your comment be to that?
Well, what you want to do is you want to clean out the tax code on the, both the personal side and business side. That's how he gets the rate low on businesses, is because he takes out all of the loopholes. You clean up the code, you can get a low rate. And countries like Ireland and Sweden and others have shown, Britain, that if you reduce the burdens on people who want to create jobs, you get more of them. Trump also has incentives to bring the hundreds of billions of dollars of profits that are sitting overseas back here into the United States. So it's an across-the-board thing. It helps people, especially middle-income people, immediately. It provides the basis for having big investment boom again, creating new factories, new facilities, new products, new services to get a vibrant economy again. So it shouldn't be a partisan thing. John Kennedy did it in the 60s. Ronald Reagan did it in the 1980s. We can do it again.
So the idea is to remove the carrot of overseas cheap labor and all the advantages and low taxes and all of that to American businessmen and have them want to come back home and invest their money and, as you said, build factories and start businesses and bring American jobs back home. Seems pretty common sense, doesn't it?
Create jobs here back home. Remember, under Reagan, we not only created a lot of jobs, but they were both starting jobs and high-paid jobs. It was across the board. And so the thing that Trump has to hammer home is, one, she wants to raise your taxes. I, Trump, want to cut your taxes. My tax plan, Trump's tax plan, gives you a tax break right up front. And, you know, the only way you're going to deal with the debt long term is by having a vibrant economy. And history shows that time and time again. When you have a stagnant economy, all that happens is you get more regulations, more taxation, more frustration, and people feeling that they don't have a chance to get ahead.
Steve, you know, Peggy Noonan wrote a really interesting editorial in the Wall Street Journal. I bet you're aware of it. It's called How Global Elites Forsake Their Countrymen. And I want to read just a phrase of it to you and get your response. She says, on Wall Street, where they used to make statesmen, they now barely make citizens. CEOs are consumed with short-term thinking, stock prices, quarterly profits. They don't really believe that they have to be involved with America now. They see their job as thinking globally and meeting shareholder expectations. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think she should paint the larger picture, too, that we have the situation we have today because of cheapening the U.S. dollar, what the Federal Reserve has done, because people are just, their minds just turn off when you say monetary policy, Federal Reserve. The Fed has done immense damage by undermining the integrity of the American dollar, a horrific tax code that brings out the worst in all of us. And one issue that I'm surprised hasn't been a bigger one in the campaign is health care.
Oh,
no one
yes.
is happy with what we have today. It is an utter disaster. You may have more insurance, but you have such high deductibles, you're paying more than ever before.
Listen, I just heard from a friend of mine back in Chicago, and my heart just broke. I know about these things intellectually, but when it starts happening to your friends, he has a heart problem. He was temporarily unemployed. He cannot not have insurance. The government's been covering him, but when he gets a job, he has to pay back what the government has paid. He makes very little money. His premium is almost $700 a month. It's breaking him. It's a tragedy. I mean, I'm speaking of him, but of course it's happening to millions of Americans across the country, and it's going to get worse, isn't it?
Yes, it is going to get worse. Costs are going up, and availability is going to be going down. And, you know, food, which is more basic, Sandy, than health care. If you don't have food, you don't have anything. You know, I think government's too involved in agriculture, but basically, agriculture produces food, private companies process it, truckers deliver it, grocery stores, supermarkets, everyone sells it. The PFOP problem, getting everything from food banks to food stamps to deal with it. I don't understand why we can't do the same thing in health care. Have a basic catastrophic coverage and have high-risk pools for people who, for whatever reason, chronic condition or the other, can't get it. You provide it to them. It's very simple. You don't have to have the government run the thing to have a basic, good safety net, just as we do with food.
Well, of course, we could do that, but I'm sure that you know the point is not health care. The point is control of the American people.
It's power. Absolutely it's right.
Power and control. Power. Yes, and so, all right, I guess I really don't. I introduced you as one of the Steves. I didn't mean to insult you. I just thought she did that. You know, she reduced all of you guys to that one name, trying to insult, I think it's, you know, Steve Moore, also from the Wall Street Journal.
He was Steve Moore, and I wasn't on the committee, but I certainly give them my advice.
Yeah. Well, so you are supporting Trump in this presidential cycle.
Yes. I said I'd support the Republican nominee, and I'm doing so.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question for you, because you know that anybody that supports Trump, who, you know, supposedly is very smart, you know, thinks that it's like having cooties to say that you're supporting Donald Trump. They're embarrassed to say it. They won't say it. They distance themselves. So how is it that a man like you, the head of Forbes magazine, would have the fortitude to dare declare that you're going to support Donald Trump?
Well, you know, you have to say now they don't agree with him on everything, but I don't agree with sometimes with myself on everything. And the question is, what's the best way to get this country moving forward? And if you have concerns about Trump, look at her. I mean, it just, the criminality, it just gets worse and worse. And one thing I think that if Trump would just get a little more focus in his campaign, more discipline, what people would realize is buildings don't go up with a speech. You got to make things happen. He's got to show he can put teams together, that he can cooperate with people, that he's got the discipline for the temperament for the job. Because, as you know, Sandy, this election boils down to third term or versus temperament. And that's the only issue she has is his temperament. He's got to take that issue away. He does that and he wins.
And we just have a minute left here, a couple of minutes. You really do itemize and sort of point out, just to narrow it down to Hillary Clinton's economic proposals, what's wrong with them?
I can't speak for others, but with her, it's with Hillary Clinton, let's just focus on her. She does not have an inner bill. There's no centrist inside her. She's a hard leftist. People, we should remind ourselves, 20 years ago, she was the one who designed Hillary Care, which is what ended up being Obamacare. She couldn't put it in 20 years ago, but that's where her mind was.
And on the tax situation, you point out that she wants to raise taxes in every single area, raise income taxes, business taxes, the death tax, a whole bunch of new levies.
Stock transaction tax. She wants to put in a gun tax. She wants to put in a soda tax, for crying out loud.
Yes. So she wants a she literally.
As somebody said, Sandy, the only thing that the only thing she doesn't want to tax are her lies.
Well, we could make a lot of money on that, couldn't we? Yeah. Well, all right. So, and really to point this out, this is what's going to hurt. Speaking of, you know, she's the champion of the middle class. So she's saying that now, too. This is what's going to hurt the middle class. All of these taxes will kill further, reduce take home pay, reduce the jobs. The draconian health care plan that will be continued is only going to get worse. And she was the champion of that, the architect of that. It's just, it's amazing. All right. So the choice.
And also, she is not categorically ruled out an increase in the payroll tax or middle class tax. She said it's a goal and a desire. That's politics for the real money's with the middle class. We're going to go after you.
All right, Steve, it's great to talk to you again. Steve Forbes, Forbes Magazine. And by the way, his article, Watch Out, Hillary, after his speech in Detroit, Donald Trump is back. We'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can read it. Steve, thank you for your time this morning. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello. This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Wesley Biblical Seminary is founded upon Trinitarian faith, Christ-centered holiness, biblical authority, and personal accountability.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Online or on our Jackson, Mississippi campus, around the nation or around the world, Wesley Biblical Seminary offers life-transforming theological education.
Apply today at wbs.edu. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Discover the difference.
One of the leading indicators of a community in crisis is the breakup of the family. I think it's a very clear illustration of what our culture demands right now, and that is the leadership of the church rolling up its sleeves, getting into our communities.
If your week's too busy to keep up with what's happening in Washington, catch up Saturday night with Tony Perkins and Washington Watch Weekly. Saturdays at 6 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In his last days in office, President Obama reportedly wants to get the UN's Security Council to endorse a ban on underground nuclear testing. It would be a twofer for Mr. Obama. First, he evidently hopes to encumber his successor from taking steps needed to modernize America's deterrent. And second, he intends once again to undermine the Constitution with its requirement that the U.S. Senate advise and consent to treaties like the Comprehensive Test Ban. But the Senate voted to reject that treaty 17 years ago for good reason. And today's Washington Free Beacon describes multi-billion-dollar investments the Kremlin is making in preparing for nuclear war by both comprehensively upgrading Russia's arsenal and the underground bunkers from which its use would be directed. We need a national debate about how best to end our unilateral nuclear disarmament, not more of it. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
At least four dead in Louisiana after the historic flooding taking place there and in a pocket of Mississippi as well. It's kind of hard to imagine that those numbers are so low, considering the number of cars and homes that are completely submerged. Those numbers are in the thousands, and you can understand why when you look at over 30 inches of rain in 3 days. Remarkable numbers, but you have a delayed reaction with the river flooding. You know, the rain stops falling, but the waters keep going up if you're near a river, and you can see these historic crests really spell it out for you. Look at the Amite River at Denham Springs. 46.2. That was the record crest that we saw on Sunday morning. That is now down closer to 45 feet, so a big improvement. But that does not mean we don't still have rescues underway. The National Guard has about 1,000 people on the ground doing those rescues. We have about 5,000 in shelters, 7,000 total rescues, and those numbers, they keep going up.
All right, that's the Weather Channel's report on what's been happening in Louisiana over the weekend. Sandy Rios back with you. My understanding is the governor said that more than 10,000 people are in shelters. More than 20,000 people have been rescued across southern Louisiana. The Baton Rouge River Center, a major events location in the capital city's downtown, was to be open Sunday as a shelter to handle the large numbers of evacuees. And by the way, any of you in Louisiana, if you're in the middle of this or if you have witnessed some of this, you have something to report, we'll take a call from you. It's 888-589-8840. Now, again, I'm not talking about just any of you. I'm talking about any of you who have directly seen or have a family member or whatever and have a story to tell us that in Louisiana. That's what I'm looking for. 888-589-8840 is our number if there's anyone out there like that. And by the way, of course, our prayers go out to all of you in Louisiana. You know, it just hasn't been that long ago, like Katrina and all the disaster that we all of us lived that, not, you know, vicariously, if not firsthand. Governor John Bel Edwards said late last night that President Obama called him and said that the people of South Louisiana are in his thoughts and prayers, and the federal government will be a solid partner. Well, I found that interesting. You know, I'm not unhappy that the president would call and assure the people of southern Louisiana of his thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers. But I found that remarkable when I saw that yesterday, the president on the golf course getting fully briefed about what's going on in Milwaukee. I'll just read this to you. A vacationing President Obama has issued no statement on the riot in Milwaukee Saturday night after the fatal police shooting of an armed black criminal, not even a call for peace, while the shooting is investigated. The rioting left four officers wounded and, of course, caused the governor to call out the National Guard. The president's at Martha's Vineyard on his annual two-week summer vacation. He was briefed on the riot by senior advisor Valerie Jarrett. And then there are clips of him at the golf course, interaction with the press. Video posted by ABC News shows the obsequious press laughingly engaging Obama about his golf game, but not one reporter is heard shouting a question about yet another American city in flames over anti-police riots by Black Lives Matter protesters. Even though Obama has welcomed the leaders of Black Lives Matter to the White House and is heavily involved in anti-police politics through his words and government policies. ABC News Politics reports on their Twitter account, POTUS jokes around as his golf partners search for their golf balls in the rough, and he says, neither of them are mine. And then it goes on, another thing, the media treats this as a joke. And on it goes. So he didn't, I guess, call the governor of Wisconsin about calling out the National Guard. He didn't call for peace among the people of Milwaukee of all colors. He didn't tap it down, even though we know, and I'm sure he must know, that race agitators in Milwaukee were calling for black Milwaukeeans to get white people. Here's an example. They're beating every white person, one of the agitators shouted in the video. They're jumping every white person. When the mob spotted a white driver, they attempted to block his car from passing. He white, beat his blank. Another video shows agitators shouting, black power, black power. Agitators destroying cars, stopping people who are white in cars and pulling them out. Another bragged on Twitter they're going to loot white-owned businesses. Now, this doesn't come from nowhere. This is being stoked by organizations like Black Lives Matter, the New Black Panthers, and by the way, the New Black Panther leader in Milwaukee, said in an interview with Aaron Klein that this is war. It's war against black people because we're the ones being murdered. Yeah, of course, he didn't have any response when he found out the officer that shot the young black man was black. You know, because that doesn't comport to the storyline here. So it's just Actually, this is what he said. And when he was confronted with that, he said, "You're only telling me the police's version. So the other man's dead. He can't give his version." So that was his response. And of course, it's a, and we all tend to be that way. Human nature is such that we want to believe our own opinions. And it takes a lot of character to admit that you're wrong, or, you know, to have a strong opinion and find out that you were wrong about something and then admit it. And it's just, you know, this is something that we all must do, regardless of our backgrounds and our prejudices. We have to all do that, all of us, all of us. So that's, I just wanted to mention that to you about Milwaukee. I thought that was pretty significant. And by the way, another officer was shot on Saturday, an officer in Georgia, small central Georgia city, shot and killed by a suspect who remains on the loose. And so, you know, whether that's, who knows? I mean, but it's just that there are so many policemen that are being shot now. We're all, you know, it's just epidemic. And yet the president remains silent because he's on the golf course having a good time. He doesn't say, you know, he could come out and say, since he identifies with Black America, obviously more than white America, why doesn't he say, you know, let me, a message, a tweet? You know, he does tweet. I would like, you know, to send a message to my Black brothers in Milwaukee. You know, this is not the time to riot and burn down businesses. This is not a time to attack white Americans. Let's wait till the investigation reveals, you know, all the facts. Nothing like that. He's just, no, nothing. But he had time to call the governor of Louisiana and wish, you know, and offer prayers and support in their tragedy, which, good for him. But the leaving out, the overlooking, the ignoring of what's going on in Milwaukee and Wisconsin is pretty amazing. So we'll see what happens up there. I'm sure that you know what happens. It's not like it blows away. And George Soros, again, is spending millions of dollars in Black communities among Black pastors to try to whip up the racial issue. And so it's not going to go away, and Milwaukee may, you know, find itself evolving into a Ferguson. And it's interesting, too, isn't it, that Missouri and also Wisconsin are kind of red states, you know, in a way. Yeah. And this is where they center their trouble. It's not happening in New York, and it could. It could happen in any city. But this is where they choose to spend their time and do their agitating. Let me go to the phones just for a second, because we're talking about the Mississippi flooding, and I ask for anyone who has a firsthand account or has seen something that they want to report, or, you know, anything related to it. I would love to take your call. It's 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Let's go to Lisa. Lisa, you're in Virginia or in Mississippi? Lisa, turn your radio down, please.
I'm in Mississippi.
Okay, all right. So, what are you seeing, Lisa?
Well, I have a close friend. He drives trucks, and he was coming out of Texas, and they had one highway shut down, so he had to stop. One of his friends got stranded, and he had to stay in the motel a while. We were talking. He was watching the news and just saw the devastation, and I just called to check on him this morning to see how his family was in Louisiana, and he finally heard from him and said they're all okay.
Okay. All right. So at least a good report from you and your friend and his family, right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Lisa. Are you seeing anything from...
And thank you so much, Sandy, for the work that you do, because there's so many things that I would not know if I didn't listen to American Family Radio.
Wow. That's very kind of you, Lisa, and that's very gratifying, because that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to get the truth out there as best we can, and I'm gratified to know you're listening. Are you seeing anything from where you are you're in Mississippi. Okay, I'm getting confused. I'm confusing myself. Okay. All right. So you're not seeing anything in Louisiana because you're in Mississippi. All right, Lisa.
No,
thanks.
No, but my friend, and he saw so many. He had to detour and finally had to stop at this motel, and he was watching the news where he saw coffins floating and people being rescued. And oh my gosh, I just heard his account of what he saw, and he finally made it home, and his family's fine. Thank God.
Yeah, thank God for that. Yeah, okay, Lisa, thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling, and thanks for those kind words. You know, that's a thing, you know. You can have more, because there's so many tragedies, it helps us to understand and have more empathy when we hear personal accounts, no question about it. Let's go to Patsy, in fact, in Louisiana. Good morning, Patsy.
Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
It is absolutely mind-boggling what's going on here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I am in a section of Baton Rouge. We're like an island here. We have no water in our streets, nothing. 2 miles out the road, there's nothing but devastation. I mean, that's how close it is. Houses under water where there's never been water before. I personally have several friends that had to be rescued, and they've lost everything. Their homes are underwater. They got out with their dogs and what they had on their backs and maybe a garbage bag full of stuff.
Patsy, when this was happening, were you aware, like where you are? You say you're dry, but were you aware that the water was coming, and were you worried for your own safety?
I wasn't worried for me personally because the water was all around us.
Yeah, but before it came, was there warning? Like, did you know?
No.
I guess, what I'm asking. Was there warning? There was no warning for them either then?
There was no warning for anybody.
Okay.
I mean, I talked to a man yesterday that lives in an area that's all underwater, and he said he was outside. Water was like up to, he pointed a place, and he said, I went inside, and 45 minutes later, it was 3 feet high right there. And he has 7 feet of water in his house.
Oh, my goodness.
But people have been going and rescuing people. It's just been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Everybody's been thankful, pulling together, praying for each other. People are men are taking their trucks with their boats and going down the interstate, off of the interstate to rescue people. People have nowhere to go. They've opened shelters. And everybody's been so thankful, but wouldn't you know, the local TV station would pick one guy. I've lost everything. This is all I've got, what I've got on me. Such, you know what I'm saying, a whiny, complaining guy, ungrateful for the fact that they brought him to a clean place and are going to provide him with a place to live for a while. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, instead of focusing on people who are rising to the occasion and rescuing and helping and people that are grateful. Patsy, you painted a really graphic, really profound, beautiful picture. Thank you so much. Let's go to John in Louisiana. You have the last word, John.
Yes, I'm in Lafayette, in the northern part of the city, over by the Vermilion River. Vermilion at Surrey is at 17.5 feet. It's the highest it's ever been, but it hasn't crested yet, to my knowledge.
John, are you worried for your own safety and home there?
No, ma'am. I'm okay. We're okay over here, but on the south side, I've been watching television in my home, and from what I've seen, they're underwater on the south side.
Yes, that's what we're hearing, John. Hey, listen, thank you for calling, and you stay safe, and I appreciate you calling to give us some insight into the height of that terrible flooding. Yeah, John, thank you so much. And all right, well, there are people suffering all around us, and so let's pray for them, let's help where we can, and let's continue to ask God for his mercy.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.